Welcome back, everybody, to Innovative Leadership. I'm Ryan Stickle. With me, as always, is Stephanie Hurd.
Welcome back.
And we are continuing on our tour here, going up the, I say going up the East Coast, really New Jersey and New York. But today we are in New York City here at EOS Worldwide in the Batcave with Jonathan B. Smith. Jonathan is an entrepreneur, author, business strategist, and expert EOS implementer, among many other things, which we'll get to today. Jonathan, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Ryan. Pleasure to have you in New York.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much for having us and giving us your time today. This has been one I'm really excited to talk to you about and just get into. I mean, we talk about EOS constantly on this podcast.
It was the inspiration, I think, to start the podcast. We just wanted to talk to other businesses that are kind of operating like us.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we talked to other business leaders who have implemented EOS in some form in their business. We've talked to, a couple others who have done a different form of EOS, but a lot of the same principles. But it's great to talk to you today, expert EOS implementer. But before we get into anything crazy, I'll let you introduce yourself a little bit to our audience and, a little bit more about your background and how you got here.
So I identify as an entrepreneur. I was actually Gino's second client with my brother, Tyler, who actually is an implementer today. He was the CIO for EOS Worldwide and Gino's tech guy for 15 years. Prior to that, I worked on Wall Street and I actually taught myself search engine optimization in 1999. We were talking about AI and it feels like search engine optimization in 1999.
Yep.
I actually spoke to Google in 2003. Sheryl Sandberg was my host. I met Eric Schmidt when I was there. There were 400 people in the room. And I was the outside perspective on how AdWords worked. They offered me a job. Maybe it was a mistake. I didn't take it, but I identified as an entrepreneur. I used search engine optimization and EOS to build a security business, primarily in the Middle East. So actually, we use search engine optimization, and that's actually where the clients came from. So I went to Dubai, spoke in Dubai, got the card of a company that wanted to work with us, and ended up with a $100 million contract in Abu Dhabi to search engine optimization and using the EOS system.
Wow.
And in 2014, I got tired of flying back and forth on those long-haul flights to Saudi and UAE and Qatar. And ultimately, my brother Tyler said, there's a bunch of people, particularly Peyton, who are doing really well at this point. You should consider being an EOS implementer. And I knew the system. I'm an entrepreneur. I know how to run a meeting. I didn't have a network in the States. My network was in Abu Dhabi. So that's kind of how we got here. 1,250 sessions later, I'm an EOS implementer. And I was Mark O'Donnell's implementer originally. He became my business partner. And now he's the visionary of EOS Worldwide.
Wow.
That's really amazing and so funny to hear somebody talk about SEO, because that's kind of a little bit in the realm of what I do. I work for our website and all that good stuff. What was that like in the early days? Because I know SEO now is a completely different animal than what it was back then.
So interestingly, it wasn't very hard to do. I went to like whatever the search engine conference was at the time. Mm-hmm. I forget what it was called, and learned how to do it. And I built a bunch of landing pages for long tail search terms that I just made up. I didn't know that that was a strategy, but I built that strategy. And then when I went and spoke at Google, they gave me $10,000 in AdWords.
Wow.
And so what I did was I took those AdWords and I used them to raise money for the Leukemia Society. Oh. So it was like one penny per click at the time. I'm not making a joke. It was one penny per click. And I raised $500,000 for Leukemia Society. They actually came to me and said, you can't do this. I said, I'm going to go to the Wall Street Journal and tell them you won't let me do this because I'm an entrepreneur. I figured out how to make it work. The fact that you can't tell people where to send a check and how to get them a honorarium, like a letter back that says someone made a gift in honor of someone, not my problem. So they figured it out eventually, but I did go raise $500,000, I was the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society Man of the Year in 2004.
Wow. Good for you. Congratulations. That's amazing. That's really awesome. I wanted to pivot to, a non-EOS kind of portion of what you do and the work you do for the Black Swan Group. The work you do there with Chris Voss, I think is fascinating. And I'll let you kind of explain in your words a little bit what you do there and what they're all about, because I think it is, I mean, it is just endlessly interesting what they're doing over at the Black Swan Group.
So I met Chris Voss when I was in DC. I had come back from the Middle East. We lived in DC at the time. I couldn't barely get a meeting with a Vistage chair. And when I was in the Middle East, I was working for the Royals. That was quite a difference.
Wow.
We had a picture with Sheikh Mohammed and ourselves, and we could just use that picture and say, do you see who that is?
Right.
That's us.
Wow.
That was like a get out of jail free card, like your like your PBA card in Abu Dhabi. So I happened to get introduced to Chris at the Tower Club, which I think you guys might be familiar with in DC. It's like the club that all business people have their breakfast at in Tyson's Corner. He needed some help on a negotiation in Abu Dhabi. He was another FBI agent, retired, who I had met. I was like, okay, I'll help him. No problem. Here's the lay of the land. Little did I know that he was the negotiator.
Wow.
And from there, he wrote the book, Never Split the Difference, with Tal Raz. I was like, okay, Chris, you're writing a book. Big deal. Everyone writes a book these days. It's like a business card. Little did I know, Chris was going to go around the world and wow the world with his negotiation skills, using tactical empathy, and become really an A-lister today. So I end up on calls with Chris with my assistant says it's like I live a reality TV life. So over time, I helped him get his first talk with YPO. I helped him get his first talk with EO. Then he went off and he just works really hard. He's a farm boy from Iowa, and we believe in going blue collar. So mm-hmm. he just gets on a plane and works. And I ended up getting qualified as Black Swan trainer. So I can coach the skills. I can lead seminars and workshops. I'm in fact writing the equivalent of What the Heck is EOS for Never Split the Difference.
Wow.
So because we think there's a missing manual that needs to exist. So mm-hmm. Never Split the Difference tells these really exciting stories of Chris traveling around the world negotiating with terrorists. And people just need to know how to work on scope creep,
right,
and negotiate scope creep, or as an example.
What is it about these, I guess, military grade negotiation tactics, hostage negotiation tactics, that are so different from maybe some of your more generic old school business negotiation tactics? Where does the kind of intersection happen there?
Well, we call it tactical empathy.
Okay.
So when we say tactical empathy, what we mean is we start with intuition. Like the idea is you think something's going on and then you verbalize it. That would be a label that we would use. So it's very unusual where we use these skills that the FBI learned over the years negotiating with hostages, and we use it in all walks of life.
Hmm.
So we get the benefit of all that the FBI has done and all that Chris has done, and then we've actually adapted it to just modern life. The total addressable market is the world, humans who are communicating.
Wow. So, I mean, more than just, you know, your general trying to close a deal in business. I mean, you use this in life, just, you know, you try to persuade people, try to win them over, whether it's personally or in business. And you're saying that can apply across the board, just in all aspects of life, whenever you're trying to maybe persuade somebody or convince someone.
People more often than not come to us and said, I used it with my kids and it worked. I used it with my teenager and they're talking to me.
I think a lot of people just heard that and their ears perked up, like, oh, maybe I should get this book and learn about it a little bit. Cause I've always been interested in persuasion theory and the idea of, you know, if you can understand someone's psychology a little bit better, understand what motivates them, you can work to get them to achieve a goal, whether for themselves or, you know, for your own means. And so when I read what the Black Swan Group was doing, I was like, this is amazing that they're able to apply these principles to more of a business world. And I guess in a personal world as well, because, you know, you would never think, well, obviously hostage negotiations, that's going to be completely different than me trying to just convince somebody to sign a new contract or convince my kid to eat their vegetables, I guess, in that case. So yeah, I was really excited to talk to you about that. We can get into EOS because I know it's going to be the bulk of what we talk about today. it's one of the big pillars of conversation on this podcast, as our listeners know, you know, and they know the inspiration behind our podcast. EOS is just the core of what we do here. What do you feel sets EOS apart from other business operating systems?
Well, we don't speak about other business operating systems. I don't really know the other systems.
Fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough.
You know, I've just been really grateful to know Gino. Like I told you, mm-hmm. I was Gino's second client, and I've used the system with over 150 clients with just outstanding results.
Yeah.
Do you have any, you know, anecdotal stories that you can share? Certainly, change the names to protect the innocence of like an example of where EOS like really made a difference in somebody's business and the trajectory that they were maybe on before EOS and after EOS.
It feels like almost every client. It's you know, I like to say EOS is designed to help you get what you want from your business.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times people have different wants. Like I spoke mm-hmm. to a lead yesterday, and this happens frequently. Like the patriarch of the family dies, mm-hmm. doesn't leave a proper succession plan. Now there's four owners in the business,
mm-hmm.
no leader.
Wow.
Now they're putting this hired gun into a leadership position.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, you're putting yourself at risk. So I'm trying to get them into a 90-minute meeting. And what will end up happening is they will not all stay in the business. I yep. generally say, yeah, I don't know who's leaving, but there will be people changes.
Yeah.
I'm not responsible for how that works out, but there will be people changes.
Yeah.
Do you think that just comes down to, is that just right person, right seat at that point? And that's them needing to implement that aspect into their business?
I think what happens is people end up in a family business like that, people end up in a job and they like come out of college or come mm-hmm. out of high school or whatever, and they start working. And they don't know anything about business.
Mm.
And so they learn everything on the job. And maybe that's not what they wanted to do, but that's mm-hmm. what they ended up doing. And now they're getting paid way more money doing that than they could do and doing anything else.
Hmm.
And so one of the advantages of having the tactical empathy skills is I can have super difficult conversations. So my assistant says, you are so direct. Yeah, it's so nice when you ask. So I'll be in the room and we'll have this conversation and I'll say, so is this how it always works here? And mm-hmm. I just drop dynamic silence and just wait. And then the waterworks happen or someone starts screaming or like we just get to the bottom of the issue and then figure out who wants to stay. And sometimes it's like, would you like your dividend but not like to come to work because you don't actually do your job anyway? And that creates all kinds of problems for everybody. I mean.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen to do EOS, you have to show up vulnerable, transparent, trusting. And I think there's just a lot of people that don't show up to work like that and don't want to show up to work like that. And I think that's where if you can't shift into being your authentic self and saying what's on your mind in those EOS sessions, like it's not going to work at some point.
Yeah. And I'm always so interested in when we break down core aspects of EOS, how much of it in conversation sounds like, well, isn't this should be obvious stuff that every business is doing in terms of standardization and organization and just getting your people power in the right direction. Yet we talk about it and it sounds obvious. And yet, you know, we weren't doing it innovative a few years ago. Not every business uses EOS. Why does it feel so obvious, yet most people haven't adopted most of these principles?
Well, I like to say it's simple, not easy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You have to have the courage to go have the conversations. So you asked me for an example. Now I have a better example than the one from yesterday. It took me a minute. So I was in a meeting, a focus day. So the first EOS day with a client at a really fancy resort. I'm like, wow, this place is beautiful. I can't believe I get to go here. I'm in the meeting and the smartest person in the meeting will not talk. So by the smartest, I mean, this person was an executive vice president in a Fortune 500 company, had come over to us as a service provider to that company, and he wouldn't talk. And there was a second party who was running a different business line, who couldn't tell me how they were profitable, that business line. Couldn't explain to me. And so both of those people resigned after Focus Day.
Wow.
Over $2 million in W-2.
Wow.
So the owner calls me and he says, by the way, I can afford to pay you for the rest of your life. I thought I was going to get fired. And he was so happy that they quit and he didn't have to pay them severance.
Wow. So he's, you know, something that would seem catastrophic. This is a horrible change. But you could probably feel that as soon as you were in the room, when this person who has the bona fides and the experience suddenly just isn't not talking, not asserting themselves, not voicing their opinion, not leading. I mean,
not engaged, just not disengaged, engaged. Just checked out. And you could see in his eyes that he knew what to say. Yeah. He just didn't want it. He wasn't engaged.
Do you think he was checking out on the idea of EOS and that change was going to happen? Or do you think that was just maybe something that had existed and needed to be maybe brought up?
Well, like we like to say, we shine the light on the mold.
Yeah.
The mold was there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. I just took my bleach and threw it on the mold.
I would imagine, and it's probably hard to recall because I'm sure you have plenty of stories like that. I'm always just so interested in, you know, hearing each business and what they went through. And, you know, we talked to a business recently who didn't use an implementer, and I was interested to hear how that went, because I believe at Innovative, we started without an implementer, mm-hmm. and now we have one. And I think that's probably when things really started to, EOS started to kind of take shape in our business.
Yeah. And I mean, that's what I was sharing with the business you were mentioning, that like, we thought we were doing it. And then you get in a room with an implementer and we're like, oh, we weren't saying these things to each other. Nobody was making us. So yeah, I mean, it makes all the difference, I think. I mean, I don't know what your experience has been in watching businesses that maybe have tried to implement themselves and the difference, but I just feel like, you know, if you're in that dynamic, nobody that's in it can ever push the entire group to have the types of conversations you have to have.
So I had got an opportunity to talk to Alan Mullally, who had saved Ford, right? They use a system like EOS. He ran a system that has a lot of the same tenets as EOS. And he actually used Patrick Lencioni as his coach.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they had other coaches, but Lencioni was sort mm-hmm. of his guy. And he always said, like, I don't want my coach to be on my W-2 because I don't want them being afraid of being fired.
Yep.
I want them to be able to say what they need to say. So like I always say, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? You're going to fire me? There's a line out the door with people who want to start tomorrow. So
yeah,
I'm going to say what needs to be said. And my job is to get you what you want from your business. And I want to be the 12th man on the team and help you get there. I will jump on the field if I have to, but I really prefer to stay in the stands.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you think it's just a matter of somebody coming in who can hold people accountable without fear of repercussion, essentially, if it's done right.
I think it's helpful.
Yeah. Yes.
I think they need to be independent. I think they have perspective. Like, I'm like, I haven't seen you for 90 days. Something's changed. What's changed? Oh, well, we implemented this new culture thing. I'm like, tell me about that, because I can tell the difference.
Yeah.
I'll see things because I haven't been there for 90 days. They mm-hmm. don't realize it because it's so familiar. It's like right in their face.
Hmm. What do you say to the business leader, business owner who maybe feels EOS might be right and they know a change is needed, but they're very fearful of those hard decisions and maybe having to fire someone who is technically good at their job, but they know that person is bad for their business, whether it's in office dynamics or, you know, they're great in one aspect, but they kind of lag in another. What do you say to the business owner that kind of fears the change, but knows change is needed?
I mean, I have a bucket on my sales funnel called not in enough pain. So I'm like, are you in enough pain to go have the conversation? Mm. And are you willing to make the change?
Yeah.
Because I don't want to show up and have the same conversation over and over and over for 5 years. I literally want to show up and go like, okay, there's an issue there. I understand we have to replace that technical resource. We have to have a plan in place. I mean, I had a client who he was being held hostage by a salesperson. Never happened before, but this client, they had it. It happens all the time. So it's exactly how you were explaining, Ryan. And so, you know, the salesperson sort of was like 80% of their sales or something. I can't remember the exact number.
Wow.
And eventually we decided to let him go, trained up three other people. 2 years later, they were like on the leaderboard in their franchise mm-hmm. system. And they're like, oh my God, with people who were humble and on the team, and they sold the business. They ultimately sold the business. They were able to do that because they actually built a sustainable business that was, I call it built to sell. You don't have to build your, you don't have to sell your business. I just want a business that you could sell if you wanted to.
Yeah. Cause it means it's, you know, thriving. It's a good asset for someone. So it's very interesting. And I always wonder about these, the right person, right seat conversation is always so interesting to me because it can fall on either side. I mean, someone could be the friendliest human being you've ever met in your life, always willing to help, but they simply don't have the capacity to do whatever their job is. And you can try to move them around, but at some point, if someone's not gelling with the business, then it you have to let them go, even though they're the best person you've ever met in your life, right? So how do business owners go about dealing with that? And I know, you know, you prefer them to deal with that. That's your hands off on that front, because you're not there to fire people. You're there just to recommend things. But how should they go about making those decisions and explaining, you know, this is an EOS decision and it's, we know it's going to be best for our business?
Well, I'll give you a couple examples. You know, I just pull out the people analyzer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So here's the core values. You know, the problem is we call those people puppies. Like there's a graph, and the people who have the right core values, but aren't in the right seat, and we don't have a seat for them. We're like, oh my God, we love those people. They've been with us from the beginning, but mm-hmm. we started and we had a $500,000 business. Today we have a $50 million business. This business doesn't have, there's not a spot for that person. We've outgrown mm-hmm. that person.
Mm.
So I pull out the people analyzer and hopefully they can see it.
Yeah.
Sometimes it just takes them quarters to get it done. And I just say, okay, so I'm not talking about this person. We've already decided this, but are you ready yet?
Do you think it helps that you're able to kind of quantify it with a measurable, like the people analyzer? It's not just a matter of, well, we don't feel you're right, or, you know, we like you, but we don't feel like your work's good enough. And there, do you think that being able to quantify it and just, you know, put it on a piece of paper and give them a score on whatever the core values are? And do you think that kind of helps ease that pain or any confusion?
I think what it does is, instead of talking about it for hours on end, we can do that in 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And say, okay, just pull the people analyzer. What's the deal? And then the other key is just have clarity on the accountability chart. Because you can do the people analyzer, but if the GWC isn't against a clear set of roles and responsibilities, then it's hard to do the GWC. And then it's like, it's really squishy.
Yeah.
What's that person's job? Do they get it? Do they want it? Do they have the capacity to do it?
Or when the worst part is when the issues come up and it's not on the accountability chart and you realize the problem is, it's not that somebody's in the wrong seat. We don't have anybody in the seat at all. And we have to solve that problem. So yeah, I mean, I love, we talked about this, in this world, it's yesterday, but to our listeners, 2 weeks ago, where the thing, you know, as an IT company, and I think a lot of technology companies have embraced EOS because we're techs at heart. We love a system. We love a checklist. We love a process. And it systemizes, just like what you said. It gives you this thing, this like complex people problem that technical people don't love the warm, fuzzy people problems. And it gives you a checklist. It gives you a tool. It gives you that 30-second process that you can follow to kind of wrap your brain around what to do with a people issue, and gives you the tools to have a conversation.
Yeah. Do you think there are consistent, I guess, characteristics of businesses that want to implement EOS or feel it's necessary? Or is it just across the board? I mean, you've worked with so many different businesses to implement EOS. Is there a consistent characteristic of, you know, whether it's disorganization, you know, lack of profitability, but seemingly what feels like they're doing the right thing? Are there anything across the board that feels like holds for a lot of businesses?
Well, we have a target market.
Yeah.
So in the target market is, used to be $2 to $50 million in revenue, 10 to 250 employees. So that's what I remember from 2014. Mm-hmm. And then it's growth oriented open-minded, appreciative, respectful, frustrated, want help, generally privately held. That's 80% of what we deal with.
Okay. Gotcha.
And a lot of times we show up, and if someone's not appreciative and respectful, it is not going to work.
Yep.
I do not want to be in the room, just like you wouldn't want to be in the room with a client who doesn't care about tech.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's like, yeah. Oh, don't replace that.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. That's going to be sunsetted and it's going to be attacked with a cyber attack.
Yes. I mean, it's how often do you think that happens? Or do you feel like, you know, as EOS continues to grow, maybe finding better fits, finding kind of maybe easier clients to work with, does it happen too often that you find a client who just isn't buying in and it's just, hey, tough conversation. This isn't going to work unless you're bought in. Or do you feel like that maybe kind of happens less as time goes on?
I think there's a lot of new EOS implementers who, I used to say I have a bad sniffer. Like I thought anyone was a client. I'm like, oh, that's a client. So first of all, you fall into that trap early on. Second of all, you can't really figure out what's up with a team until you get into the session room with them and see how they operate and act together. So even I had, I'm thinking of this email I got from a client, and it was basically like, the team I brought to Focus Day was not my team. It was my dad's team. Mm-hmm. My dad is retiring. Mm-hmm. This team is not my future team. I can't move forward with it. And then the son and the father were at odds in the session. That the father showed up early to politic with me prior to the meeting. And I'm like, I don't know any of the dynamics here. So
yeah. Yeah.
They didn't move forward. I was grateful for that because like, if you aren't ready to operate with and run the system, like Mark O'Donnell and I always said, like our best clients just sort of accept the fact that they're going to follow the EOS process. And if they don't, it's challenging.
I'm realizing as we're talking, I feel like, you know, EOS is to leadership and organizational structure kind of what we try to be in technology. Like we have these same conversations around, you have to have a problem or else there's not enough impact for us to make, but you can't have so much of a problem that you're the problem and you can't get out of your own way because then we can't fix it. And we're just all going to be miserable. So you have to be open to it. You have to be respectful and open to be pushed and willing to have sometimes the difficult things said to you, and but also have enough of a problem that we can make an impact. And that's like there's that sweet spot there of those businesses that you can help. And when, I feel like when you stop trying to be the solution for everyone is when you find like your most rewarding clients.
Yeah,
we've definitely been through that cycle in the 23 years at Innovative for sure.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about what EOS does for, you know, kind of the processes of a business. How are your meetings run? How are you calculating your measurables, your goals, putting your rocks together for your team? Can you talk about the impact that can have on a business? And this could be for, you know, a portion of our audience who maybe isn't quite bought into EOS, but is very interested in what they're hearing. What those processes do when they are finally implemented and sustainable, and you have good leaders who are bought in and making sure these things continue to be properly implemented, what that does for a business and how it kind of frees up brain power and human power to actually get work done rather than worry about what are we doing in this meeting? Who's responsible for this?
Well, it's interesting because we say the EOS process takes like 2 years to implement in a business. So you asked me multiple elements of the EOS model. So the challenge is, I'll just go with the meeting piece. So we say EOS does three things. We call it vision, traction, and healthy. Vision, kind of like where we're going 5 to 10 years from now, getting everyone aligned around that. Traction, what are we doing in the next 90 days to hold everyone accountable to drive towards that vision? And then healthy, having organizational clarity, who's responsible for what, and then having the difficult conversations like we were talking about. And I say, foundationally, the meeting pulse, we have a weekly meeting, which we call the level 10 meeting. You guys are technologists. I prefer to run my level 10 meetings in the software called 90.io. So there's software specifically designed to run EOS. And you can run the EOS. There's a specific format how the meeting works. So instead of just showing up and going, hey, good morning. How's everything going? What's going on?
Yeah.
You know, and everyone does a readout of what their week looks like, and you basically ignore everything except your own piece. We have a format called the level 10 meeting, which allows teams to stay on track. So when I talk to technologists, I say EOS is to running a business as Agile is to running a software engagement. So it is the standard for running a small, medium-sized business. And I've done it with a business as large as $5 billion. So.
Oh, wow.
We've talked about the kind of the target market for EOS. And you said something to me prior to this, prior to starting to recording, about your negotiation clients and your EOS clients, that they're not the same. And I'm wondering, like, what's different about them? How are your negotiation clients in a different kind of target?
So the EOS clients pretty much specifically have a business that we're working with. So think SMB.
Yep.
I mean, I work with the Spy Museum in DC.
Yep.
But in general, like that 80% of the time, I'm working with an SMB.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're working with a negotiation client, the total addressable market is much, much larger. So it's someone who's at Citibank who runs investment banking, someone who's at a hedge fund doing big deals, lawyers who are negotiating all kinds of deals, you know, folks in government who are doing things. Like it's anyone we say who's highly, highly ambitious and competitive and is interested in getting better.
So the similarity there would also be you have to be bought in, which I feel like is kind of a principle you could apply to anything you do in life, which you have to be bought in. What do you think you're going to achieve if you're not all in on this? And so, you know, I feel like we've hit on it a few times today with EOS. If your business is not ready to go all in on this, then how do you expect to see any type of measurable change? So I wanted to go a little bit off track with you because I read your bio. I did my research. You have some dog training expertise that I had to ask you about. Can you talk to us about that a little bit?
Sure. So on my 10-year target, it's like, I want to come to work with my dog every day. That's how I've always been. I like to be with the dog the time. And so I have trained a bunch of guide dogs for the blind. So my dog died last April. So he would usually be in session with us.
Oh.
And well, thank you. He was 14. So we had no more levers to pull. You know, they get old. But he would be in session with me and just go lay in the corner. If someone started crying, he'd go talk to them. You know, they go over and pet them. And so I basically have raised 2 leader dogs for the blind. And then over Christmas, since we don't have a dog now, we had like a camper. They have this camper concept for like 2 weeks. We took a dog who was in training. And the woman who has the dog is at the Merchant Marine Academy. And I think she went home for Christmas or something. So the dog came with us and had lived at the Merchant Marine Academy, and then the dog was able to go on the train with me and go on the subway with me and go to restaurants with me and live a New York life. And I just generally want to be with the dog. And I think we say it goes up and down the leash. So your energy goes up and down the leash the same way it would work in a level 10 meeting. Like if the leader is confident and the leader gives direction and the leader has clarity, the dog works perfectly. You're like, why does my dog work perfectly with you, but not with me? Well, I'm giving good direction.
Huh.
And Ryan knows our level 10 meetings have had themes of dogs. We've had two innovators' dogs, one of them being mine and one of them being one of our sales assistants that have had surgery recently. So they have been dominating that as part of the personal and professional check-ins lately.
How do you think the mental health conversation comes into this business side of things when you're making these hard decisions with EOS and you're undergoing change? Even if someone's bought in and they're doing what's being asked of them, it can still be very difficult for a business leader and owner to let people go, to see their business change, and it can be very scary. What do you suggest to them, or do you suggest anything at all to help them kind of cope with that change, or maybe reassure them that, you know, it's going to be okay. We're making the right steps here.
So one of the things that I have a bunch of partners in the US. So Mary Pat Knight is one of my partners. When I have an EQ issue with a client, sometimes I have clients, I'm like, the smartest person I've ever met IQ wise, but you studied for a long time at school and you never talk to people. You should probably go talk to Mary Pat because she's going to help you fix your, you know, EQ communication style. So, you know, I'm very collaborative with other professionals. I actually believe, so I wrote a book called Optimize for Growth. And the idea with Optimize for Growth is that you need a coach for you, just for you, to deal with you. You need a peer group. Well, the peer group is YPO, EO, Vistage, any of those peer groups. And then there's an operating system. I only run the operating system.
Yeah.
I am not the coach. Mary Pat, in some cases, is the coach or often the go-to coach. You know, I have very good relations, or I have like a sales coach who's available, with my buddy Jay. And the idea is, and then you should be in a peer group. And so I think that combination gets you supported in a better way.
Yeah.
And then I can do, because what I say is only one of you can talk to me outside of session. Otherwise, I get triangulated into whatever's going on in the business. Mm. And so if someone else from the team wants to talk to me, I talk to my point of contact and say, are you okay if I talk to this person? And are they going to talk to me about any of the dysfunction that's going on in the business? Or is this like a black and white issue that I don't have to deal with dysfunction?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's great. And, you know, saying, I know you're struggling, but I'm not a professional to deal with this. I am, you're concentrating on your role and your energy on that role, but here's some other things you can do to help ease your worries, to help ease your pain and your struggles. Cause there are ways to go out there. Peer groups. I mean, we talked for so long yesterday about how useful peer groups are, and beyond what you may learn or what maybe you learn about your industry or your role, just to have a place to go. And, you know, I find in my peer group a lot, people just come and we spend 15 minutes just venting. Here's what I'm struggling with. And it's just a great release in a group of people who pretty much all understand what you're going through and kind of how you're feeling about certain things. Cause it tends to be across an industry, across a particular job role, where you kind of feel things in waves and in flows. Can you talk a little bit more about peer groups and why it is so important for leaders to be a part of those?
There's a bunch of different kinds of peer groups. Yeah. So when I talk about YPO, YPO is a peer group for business owners across a variety of industries, typically in the same geography, just because it's convenient to get together there. But YPO is a global organization. There are peer groups that are industry specific. So, you know, I know for sure that in the ISP world, there's a bunch of different options of how to do that. So that would be like, yeah, you're in a peer group with other folks who are in the same business, but you're not competitive because you're in different markets. And then there, I've even seen peer groups where like CFOs have their own peer groups. So CFOs from different organizations. But the key to a peer group, it's called a community of practice. So what a community practice actually means is it's you're walking the same journey. So meaning like, you know, you're all CFOs or you're all in the ISP business or you're all business owners. You are non-competitive. So you can't be in a peer group where you feel like unsafe to go share what you're doing, and you're looking to achieve this similar outcomes. So that community of practice is the basis for all peer groups. That's
gotcha.
It's the academic version of it.
Yeah. I know mine has been super helpful for me and just talking through certain issues, you know, I might face in my job that, you know, in my role at our company, I'm the only person who really does what I do. Steph pretty much did her job plus my job before I got here. So she's great to go to, but it's nice to have people who are doing that, and that's their sole focus. And they're, you know, maybe more on the relatively new side like I am. I guess a year and a half in at this point. And I found it so helpful to be able to have a group of people who a lot of them think the same way as me, and we're different people, but we ended up in these roles. And I find that our kind of processes, the way we think through issues and think through how to create content, seems to be very similar. Do you find that in, you know, any peer groups that you might be in, that you kind of have similar processes, or do you feel like it's a lot of different types of people?
Well, so I was in EO for 12 years and like three different peer groups in EO. And now I say I have like 50 peer group members, because I call the peer group member who knows that particular issue. I have an issue, I call a guy who knows healthcare, or I call the person who knows IT or what have you. Mm-hmm. And then in EOS, we have T groups. So what happened was, I had a T group, was called the Honey Badgers. So I took sort of the 12 best implementers at one point, because we were like all walking the same journey. And I was like, I don't want to walk the same journey that the new people are on. I need to be with other people mm-hmm. who are having the same experiences I'm having. And that's one of the reasons that I originally started really digging in on facilitation or negotiation in 2015, because that's where I was getting stuck in the room. Mm. So I took everyone to the Low Foundation. Dino Signori is our academic facilitation trainer and my coach. So they came with us and we learned facilitation and walked the same journey. And when that journey was over, sort of like a reason, a season, or a lifetime, it was like a season. We worked together and we're still tight, but we all went in our separate ways. Jill was in the peer group. Jill Young, who's the head coach at EOS, was in the peer group. Oh. Mark O'Donnell was in the peer group, and like 10 other people.
So, I mean, you got that group together just because you wanted a group that maybe had some more shared experiences or similar experiences with implementing?
We were all just a little bit more advanced.
Yeah.
So what would happen is new people would come on board. And if you're in a peer group, you want to be sort of in the middle in terms of experience. You don't mm-hmm. want to be the most experienced or the least experienced. You want to be able to both give and get. And so I tried to build a group that, with the 12 of us, where we could all positively impact each other and actually receive from each other, because it's kind of lonely to be out here doing EOS and going like this. Just, I remember being in Milwaukee and some session was melting down and I could get someone at lunch and go like, this is what's going down. Walt Brown, who's the coach of the expert EOS implementers now in Raleigh. And Walt was actually able to talk me down from the ledge for 15 minutes, because I'm like, I'm in this room and I'm getting shot at. What should I do? Literally shot at, but it felt like I was being shot at.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's so important to have just people that understand what you're going through. Like, you can have the best support system in your personal life, but I mean, I am fortunate that my spouse is also a salesperson. So he and I can bounce things off of each other, but not everybody has that benefit. And having other people that can just go to lunch and be like, I'm just trying to get this person to sign this contract. And like, they get how hard that is sometimes. Yeah. That's so important to have those people that just kind of get it when, you know, you can have a lot of well-intentioned people in your life, but if they're not kind of fighting that fight, they can't possibly empathize with it.
Yeah, I don't think there's, and I mean, we've proved it today, there's not just one thing you can do to help your business or help ease your worries with your job or, you know, improve profitability, whatever it might be. I mean, there's so many different processes and people and aspects of professional life to kind of improve you or raise you up. You know, EOS will factor in one part of your business, but then on your personal side, your mental side, maybe you need a peer group, maybe you just need a good support system at home. There's all these different aspects that really play into being successful and being happy while successful. So
the goal is just to get 1% better every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And don't give yourself a hard time if something didn't work today, because that means you just got a little closer to figuring it out.
Yes. Always learn from your mistakes. Don't let them just completely crumble around you and wreck your world. I believe it was Jason we had on a couple weeks ago, and he says, you know, I've made some of the most expensive mistakes in this company being the owner, but, you know, we're still here and we're doing okay. Like, I can live with my employees making mistakes as long as they're not these big fundamental doing their job incorrectly on purpose type of mistakes, because I know people are going to mess up. It's an imperfect world. I'm not blind to the fact that people are going to, you know, over time make a mistake now and then.
Well, I say, just let's not make unforced errors.
Yeah. Very good point. Unforced is the key word there, I think. So, Jonathan B. Smith, you have been wonderful today. We really appreciate you having us. Yes,
thank you so much.
Yes, being in a completely different office was crazy enough, but we're doing it in different states and different cities. So,
and thank you for opening the Batcave up to us.
Yes, happy to be here in the Batcave. And I just want the audience to hear Batcave, and you just picture whatever you want for this office.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, really appreciate it. Steph, thank you once again.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you all in a couple weeks. We appreciate you for joining us here on our little innovative leadership road trip. We will talk to you soon.